Welcome to Speak for Yourself from the Crib, presented by Hyundai, Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. Happy day before Friday. Got a great show planned for you guys. Nick Swisher is going to join us here in a moment, and we're going to talk some Major League Baseball. We got two great guests we're going to pull up with. Patriots great, three-time Super Bowl champion Willie McGinnis is going to join us. And then he'll be followed by Emmanuel Sanders, the new wide receiving target, headed to New Orleans, the guy that got overthrown in the Super Bowl by Jimmy Garoppolo. He's going to join us. We'll pull up and talk with him. But we're going to start with Major League Baseball and more developments as Major League Baseball tries to get back on track. The owners, of course, have made a proposal for an 82-game schedule, and the players have balked, or some have balked, at the idea of splitting the revenue 50-50. The players have balked at that. They want a prorated version of their contracts. But Tampa Bay Rays ace Blake Snell wants even more. Listen to what Blake Snell had to say about the owner's proposal.
Bro, y'all gotta understand too, because y'all gonna be like, bro, Blake, play for the love of the game, man. What's wrong with you, bro? Money should not be a thing. Bro, I'm risking my life. What do you mean it should not be a thing? It 100% should be a thing. If I'm gonna play, I should be getting the money I signed to be getting paid. And on top of that, so all that money's gone, and now I play risking my life. And if I get the Rona, on top of that, if I get the Rona, guess what happens with that? The damage that was done to my body, that's going to be there forever.
All right, Blake Snell balking at the idea of playing for anything less than his full amount of salary. All right, we're joined by Nick Swisher from Tampa. Nick Swisher joining us from his spare crib in Tampa, Florida. Perfect place to be. Yeah. Nick, get us rolling here. Does Blake Snell have it right here? Do you have a problem with his comments about playing for a reduced pay in a half of a season?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not the judge and juror on this. I just know one thing as an athlete. Marcellus, you can back me up on this. Even if you do believe that, you just don't say it like that. And I think he was on his Twitch. He was playing his video games. He felt like he was in a comfortable environment, and he just went off. I don't think he thought this was going to get blown up as much as it has. Now, on the other side of things, yes, do you want to play for the love of game? Absolutely, no doubt about it. But then, you know, like, people need to understand, there is the collective bargaining agreement is up this year. There could be a stoppage of play. There could be a strike next year at some point. So right now, there is a major rift between the owners and the players, and I think somebody's going to try and make their point heard. Obviously, Blake Snell's the first one to pop off about all this stuff. I'm sure you're going to hear some other people's opinions, too. For myself, man, this is something we've never done before, right? We've never been in this situation in our life. You cannot be talking about money when 33 or 40 million people don't have jobs right now. So I think you can look at it from both sides of the thing. Obviously, I want sports back just like anybody else, but I also understand what Blake is saying about how he needs to make sure that they're going to be protected, right? I mean, at the end of the day, a lot of people have lost their life because of Corona, and Blake doesn't want to be the next guy to have that happen to him.
Man, I love you, Nick. You're my dog, Swizzy, but I ain't got your back on this one. Look, I am Blake Snell right now because there's never a wrong time to say the right thing, and he said the right thing. Look, we have to call BS on what the Major League Baseball owners are proposing. Let's just be real about this. In March, they should have had the foresight to see how this could play through in all scenarios, and they came to the table with a prorated salary guarantee. Now, they want to take a cut and make it a 50-50 revenue split. Sounds great, huh? Except it's not 50-50. How much do the baseball owners make in television partner rights? They don't want to talk about that. Wait a minute. So it's not 50-50. These games won't have fans. They're only going to be broadcast on television. So guess what? We're the ones taking the risk being out there. You're going to show it on TV. How much are you making from TV so we can get 50-50? Mum's the word from the baseball owner. So I love the way that Blake said it. He said, I am not going to go out there and take a lower salary and higher risk. You must think I'm Boo Boo the Fool. I am Blake Snell.
Listen, I think there's truth in what Marcellus said, but Swish, I got to agree with you. There's a time and a place for everything. Blake Snell has messed up the game. He's playing a game of checkers in a game of chess. The point you made, 30 million Americans out of work. Blake Snell scheduled to make $7 million. Half of that is $3.5 million for playing a game, for playing an 82-game schedule. I get where Blake Snell and these guys are coming from. I don't want to take half the money, particularly because I got to trust the owners. But how the average American hears that, the average sports fan, $3.5 million during the coronavirus for playing 82 games, I'm sitting out here jobless. The economy has been destroyed. I don't know how I'm going to provide for my family. It would have been much better for Blake Snell to just simply say, hey, man, I don't like the proposal. I'm not really down with that, and leave it at that. If he leaves it there, he's made no mistake. He's expressed his opinion. But now you want to be the face of it? And again, yeah. You're down in Tampa. I just don't think this is going to play well. 2 years ago, he was a Cy Young Award winner, ERA, I think 1.89, 21-5. Last year, fell off a cliff, 4.29 ERA. The baseball fans in Tampa hearing this guy after that season sound like he's greedy and ungrateful, even though he may be on the right side of this argument, it's just a bad play for Blake Snell and I think his Major League Baseball brethren.
Well, also, too, man, he was the first guy to do it. So us as the media, obviously, we're going to latch on to that and we're going to try and pick apart everything that he said. Now, on the other side, hey, I'm an ex-player, so I understand how you want to make sure you get yours. I get that. I mean, I think that's a fair statement to say. But also, too, we are in some crazy times and we've never been through something like this. I don't want to feel like I'm taking the owner's side because I'm not. But at the end of the day, like, you don't need to be the guy to say that, right? I understand Blake wants to step up. He wants to be a leader. And at the end of the day, he is. He's one of the best pitchers that we have in our game. I'm interested to see what's going to happen moving forward from this. What types of guys are going to stand out? The Clayton Kershaws of the world, the Mike Trouts of the world, the Aaron Judges of the world. I'm interested to see what these guys say. I mean, obviously, you're taking a risk. There's no doubt about it. We've been watching KBO baseball for the last couple of weeks. There's no doubt about it. We can definitely see that. I also think on the other side of things, going out there and playing in front of no fans is going to be difficult for some guys. For an emotional guy like me running out in front of 20, 30,000 fans every night, that was the juice that the game brought. I'm interested to see how these players are going to go about trying to get the season going. And if they do, what's going to happen with the, you know, with the juice, with the fans, you know, what types of numbers are these guys going to be putting up? Because right now, for the first time in my life, sports have stopped and I need them. I need sports back. And I think we need to get creative in figuring out how exactly we're going to do this because the owners need to understand they're not on the field. The players are the guys that are actually going out there and playing the games.
Yeah. And look, we just brought up the average American and the lens that they're seeing this through. Let's not talk down to the average American. Let's talk up to them and pull the wool from their eyes in terms of who's really greedy in this situation. It's not the millionaire players. It's the billionaire owners. They won't even come to the table with full transparency, but they want to negotiate. And I'm not a baseball player. I'm not a retired baseball player. I'm an athlete, and I'm in broadcasting, and I'm going to tell the truth no matter where it lands. And right now, baseball is trying to use this pandemic, a global issue and crisis, to try and wedge in something that they've never been able to do, which is basically give them a salary cap. We're going to restrict your earnings based on revenue. That's called a salary cap. And then you won't even give us the entire gamut of earnings, of revenue. Come on, y'all. I know it may sound insensitive. I know the average American is struggling. But the last thing I would want is someone else to suffer because I'm suffering. I would want this to be a level playing field. And I think the average American understands who's really the greedy one in this conversation.
The only thing I would tell Blake Snell and all professional athletes at this time, the only thing to be careful, maybe hold your powder, just tone it down. Again, you can have your opinion because, again, I believe Blake Snell, Major League Baseball players in the union are on the right side of this. I think people have made great points in terms of let's go ask billionaire owners to step up their level of sacrifice in this unprecedented time. I would just say this, though. Once people go through the process of, hey, I haven't had pro sports for a sustained period of time, and then they see their economic situation change. Don't just make the assumption that everybody's going to come running back when things are normal like they always do. People can develop new habits. And will that be a mass exodus from pro sports or whatever? No, I don't think so. But pro athletes who are blessed to make so much wealth in this country and not taking a dump on them or trying to criticize them, it's a great blessing. Make sure you're grateful at this time of that blessing and be respectful of the people that aren't blessed that way, because they are the actual support and why you make all that money, and you don't want to do anything to antagonize them during this unprecedented time we're going through. Swish, we would all like to be as blessed as you and live in a house. I have a second or third home down in Tampa. Hey, thank you for joining us. We'll have you back.
You guys are great.
We're
going
to keep it rolling. Willie McGinnis is going to join us next from his crib. We're going to talk some NFL, some Cam Newton and Bill Belichick. Did that actually work? Speak for yourself from the crib. Presented by Hyundai. Or after this.
That Photoshop.
A healthy lifestyle should be easy, right? Eat veggies, drink green smoothies, exercise to get your heart rate up, and do yoga to bring your heart rate down. Woo! Maybe not so easy. But there is something that helps improve everything, and you can do it with your eyes closed. It's sleep. Sleep Number knows what it takes to sleep your best. The Sleep Number 360 Smart Bed lets you choose your ideal firmness, comfort, and support on each side. Your Sleep Number setting. It's the perfect solution for couples. These beds are so smart, they respond to your every move and automatically adjust to keep you sleeping comfortably all night. Proven quality sleep is life-changing sleep. And now, for a limited time during the Memorial Day sale, save $1,000 on a new Sleep Number Special Edition Smart Bed, a queen, now only $1,799. You only find Sleep Number at Sleep Number stores or by visiting www.sleepnumber.com. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself. Today's big story is sponsored by KFC's $20 fill-up. Drive-thrus open or get delivery by Grubhub.
That's my dog!
All right, welcome back to Speak for Yourself. From the crib, Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley, on the day before Friday and the weekend. All right, let's roll out to Willie McGinnis's crib. We have Willie over the phone. Willie, of course, the great former Patriot, great three-time Super Bowl champion, now an analyst for the NFL Network. And let's start here. There are reports that the Patriots may have a lingering interest in Cam Newton, which I think begs the obvious question. Could Cam Newton and Bill Belichick actually coexist? Could that duo work together? Who better to answer that question than Willie McGinnis? Willie, do you think Cam Newton and Bill Belichick, could that duo work? Marcellus.
Can you guys hear me?
Marcellus, I think we're going
to... Yeah, we hear you.
Oh, yeah, we got you, Willie.
There we go, man. So I would say this. I would say Bill Belichick has been the ultimate professional when it comes to juggling egos and different characters and different personalities. Corey Dillon, a lot of people question if he could coexist with, you know, Bill Belichick when he came from Cincinnati. Randy Moss. Gronk is a huge personality. And I would say that when you look at Cam Newton and the issues he's had, it's never been off the field. It's never really been on the field. It's been when he hasn't performed at a certain level and he's frustrated or upset with himself, or he didn't win football games. And it was usually at the press conference, at the podium. Now, we both know, or we all know, that the quarterback position is at the podium and speaks to the media every single day. And the one thing that I would always kind of give advice to Cam to is, look, you're polarizing. You're a superstar. You're an MVP. You led your team to the Super Bowl. You have to handle adversity the same way you handle winning football games. It's the toughest thing for an athlete to do. And he understands that as he's matured, nobody likes losing. Marcellus, you played the game. I played the game. We hate losing. But when you address the media, you have to do it in a professional manner, and you have to address things the same way you do as if you lost the game, as you won the game. You don't have to like it, but you got to do it. And I think Bill Belichick has handled so many different personalities that they would coexist. It would be a great working relationship. And there, I'm just telling you guys right now, there is a lot of respect from the Patriots organization when it comes to Cam Newton, because they have played several times and Cam Newton has showed out and played at a high level every single time they've played. And if I haven't checked the numbers, but I think Cam Newton may have a winning record against the Patriots.
Look, I think it definitely can work. You talk about Bill Belichick and who he really is. He's pliable. And I'm not talking about his persona when he goes to the podium and mumbles his responses just to keep everything close to the vest. I'm talking about what Willie's talking about. Actually having personalities on his team with the latitude of a Gronkowski or Edelman on one side. And then you get guys who are doing things exactly by the book, like a Teddy Bruschi or so. He has that latitude. And you can see it even in his play calling when he had to have spot duty opportunities at quarterback. Jacoby Brissett goes in there. They're running bootlegs. They're not running the same exact plays for a Tom Brady. When he needs a special defense to go out there and shut down a high potent offense, he'll put a two-man front out there, even in the playoffs. So Bill Belichick has shown people, if they really look, that he is wide open and could apply his system based on what talent he has. I think they could definitely coexist.
Willie, I thought what you gave was one of the best answers I've ever had to a question. You spelled out all the issues, and it's about whether Cam can be consistent enough at the podium in presenting the face of the franchise. A quarterback is different than a tight end, a wide receiver, a linebacker, anything else. And that partnership between Belichick and Tom Brady consistently hitting the same notes and putting on the same face for the Patriots organization, could Cam do that? And here's the reason why I think there's a chance Cam could do it, and you may be right. Bill Belichick is that unique coach that almost has that stern father effect on every player that joins the organization. I think Cam Newton would get into pleasing Bill Belichick and proving that, yeah, I'm the kind of professional athlete who could actually work with a Bill Belichick. It would go a long way in reshaping his image off the field for a lot of fans and a lot of Cam's critics. And so I just think Belichick's unique relationship with players and how people want to please him, and Randy Moss, I think, benefited from that, and on and off the field. I think that would be a similar situation with Cam Newton, and perhaps he could consistently step to that podium, put on a professional face, and hit the same tone as Bill Belichick and what Tom Brady did for 19 years. Willie?
And Jason, that's a great point, man. The one thing you have to understand about the Patriots organization, it's always team before individualism. And there's a lot of guys that want to push their brand and they want to go outside the box and promote themselves and do different things. That's fine. The organization has nothing to do with that, or they won't be upset at that. As long as you're performing at a certain level, as long as you're consistent with the other 353 players on the team as far as being accountable, doing the work you're supposed to do, putting in the work when nobody's looking, doing everything you can to win football games. At the quarterback position in New England, there is no Tuesday off. There's no days off. You come in on Tuesdays. You scheme with Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick about the opponent going into the next week, because the system and the game changes every single week. You don't run the same system. It's all catered to who you're playing against. And I think for polarizing players that's used to being the superstars and used to being the man, sometimes they can't handle when everybody's treated the same. Everybody goes up on the big screen in the Monday meeting if you didn't perform well and gets criticized. But what that does is it makes you not only respect the coaches, but it makes your teammates, everybody respect each other equally because nobody's above the team. Although we know who the superstars are in the locker room, we know that. We know Tom Brady. We know Edelman. We know Hightower. We know Jamie. We know who the guys are, McCourty. We know who the superstars are, Slater. We know who the guys are. But when everybody's treated the same, it makes the player on the practice squad work just as hard as the number one pick overall. And all I'm saying is Cam has a unique ability. If he can refine and if he's healthy at throwing a football, we know he had the shoulder surgery. So that's a concern. Nobody's seen him. Nobody know where he's at with that. We know he had the Liz Frank with the foot. That's one of his most dangerous weapons. Getting out of the pocket, moving the pocket, being a runner. So you add another running back like a Lamar Jackson to the running game, and you add that extra ability for Cam in a Patriot system with Josh McDaniel and Bill Belichick scheming it up. That's the only thing I think holding up anything for Cam Newton. People want to know if he's 100% healthy. And going into certain systems, you got to abide by certain rules. But the players that have done that have came in, have won a lot of football games, and most of them have won championships. So at the end of the day, it's worth it.
Yeah, look, Cam Newton, let's talk about his level of humility. And I don't think a lot of people even think he has one, but I certainly can attest to that, knowing Cam Newton and just everyone watching him from his career, how he rose from the ashes after his own self-inflicted issues at Florida and going to a junior college and picking himself up. Like, Cam has not been humbled by this game necessarily, by another man or opponents, but his body has failed him. And a guy who was injury prone, who was robbed of his complete success and at his heights, I know that personally how that feels. It's one thing to look outside and you're like, you know what, I can conquer all these things, but it's another thing to have to look inside and realize it is fickle in terms of every single opportunity. I think he's in a different place in terms of that humility, willing to accept that I still am the ultimate competitor. I still think I have great attributes, but I need to go out there and respect that not everything is guaranteed. It would be a perfect marriage. Bill Belichick, attention to detail, having that personality to be able to have the bandwidth to deal with a Cam Newton. But Cam Newton coming in with a different mindset, realizing how fickle this game can be.
Great All right, point. Cam Newton 2-0 versus New England Patriots. Willie was right. He has performed well. All right, let's move on to the other big-name free agent out on the market, a former number one draft pick, Jadeveon Clowney. Clowney hasn't cut a deal with the Seattle Seahawks, set a pretty high price, expectations for how much he was going to get paid, perhaps has scared some teams off. I'm someone that thinks Jadeveon Clowney's name is bigger than his game. Willie, do you think Jadeveon Clowney's name is bigger than his game?
I do think being the number one pick, the expectations were high. It's high for any player, especially a defensive player. Mario Williams had to wear the same jacket coming out as the number one player. Chase Young wasn't the number one player. He was the number two player picked in this year's draft, but he's going to wear the same title. And expectations are high. Has he performed as a number one pick with the production on a consistent basis, week in, week out, year to year, through 5 years? No, absolutely not. We've seen it in spurts. We've seen Jadeveon Clowney go out and dominate games. We've seen Jadeveon Clowney go out and just dismantle tight ends and tackles and just, you know, annihilate the quarterbacks and just be a disruptive force. But the problem is you have not seen it on a consistent basis. If you're talking about just being an athlete, going out there, making loose plays, great plays, swimming over somebody, getting in the backfield, getting a tackle for loss, that's great. But I can put on the tape and show you at the point of attack in the playoffs against the Indianapolis Colts, when they ran direct runs at him, There was no discipline. There was none of that. There was no disruptors. They pretty much marched him off the football and did whatever they wanted him to do. I think that's the things the true football minds are watching. They're looking at the tape. They're having conversations with personnel people and head coaches that he's played for. Is he disciplined? What's his work ethic like? Is he a locker room leader? If we're going to pay a guy $100 million, we want to make sure he's not only affecting the play, but he's also affecting the locker room and other players around him. Is he that guy? Is he that guy that's going to work his ass off when nobody's there in the offseason, during the season, and do more than what's asked of him? How is he in the meeting rooms? All those questions are going to be asked if you're talking about paying a player, regardless of what position it is, top-tier dollars. And the one thing I don't like nowadays game is you don't really get paid on production. You get paid because that's the market value. Back when we played Marcellus, you had to go out and earn a new contract. You had to earn your signing bonus. You had to earn to be in the top five at your position, making a certain amount of money based on your production, based on your numbers, based on time played, based on how you was in the locker room. All those things factored in. Now, what the market value is, that's what dictates what players are getting paid. So there should be a red flag going up if you look at all the defensive players that was paid in the offseason, and a lot of people said Jadeveon Clowney was the number one free agent on the defensive side, and he still doesn't have a contract. Red flags should go up, and I think people are concerned with some of the things I mentioned and going forward and giving them that franchise-type deal.
Yeah, I'm with Jason. Obviously, his name is bigger than his game. And I like Jadeveon. And I think what happens is, it's not just that he was the former number one overall pick, because you can justify that pick with numbers. We play defensive end, defensive line. If you get double-digit sacks, everyone's off your back. It's just that simple. So Jadeveon could absolve himself of all these issues in terms of reputation if he just goes out there and gets double-digit sacks at least once in his career, which he has not. And then you talk about how in our day you had to earn it. I always tell this story about Jadeveon, who I really like, who I think has tremendous ability. But like you said, you put on the tape, there are moments you're like, really? And then you look at the total culmination of the numbers, and you're like, that's not elite talent numbers. And he has elite talent. When I had six sacks, I remember going upstairs to my owner's office, getting reprimanded almost. Hey, Marcellus, you do this again, You're going to have to be looking for work elsewhere. Meanwhile, a Jadeveon Clowney gets six sacks, and he's in the Pro Bowl getting love. There's a difference there, and it's not about draft position. It's about going out there, lighting the film up, and making those numbers matter. And so far, he hasn't done that consistently.
Willie, thank you so much. Man, you might make the Sports Broadcasting Hall of Fame as well. You put in some work today. Awesome stuff. We got to keep it moving. Emmanuel Sanders, the New Orleans Saints' new wide receiver, is just around the corner. Emmanuel Sanders came so close to winning the Super Bowl this year, but my Kansas City Chiefs got him. Emmanuel Sanders from his crib. Speak for yourself, presented by Hyundai. More after this. All right, welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the crib. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. The day before Friday. All right, time to roll out to Denver, Colorado, and be joined by the newest member of the New Orleans Saints, Emmanuel Sanders, who came oh so close to winning the Super Bowl this past year with the San Francisco 49ers. Jimmy Garoppolo, if you guys remember, long overthrow late in that game for the Chiefs to win. But Emmanuel, you did something very unique
And guess what? You said you were a Kansas City Chiefs fan. You happy about that, huh?
I'm very happy about it.
Look. But, I see a little smile came across his face when he said it.
Let's start here. You did something unique. You played 17 games last year in the regular season because you played for two different teams, the Broncos and the 49ers. Was there any extra money in that for you, and what was that like?
No, it wasn't. And I remember calling my agent and asking the same question. He was like, no, they just literally extend the contract out, which I didn't think was cool. But at the end of the day, you know, it was just a blessing to really be on that team in general. You know, you want to talk about, you know, I love the Broncos organization. You know, I love John Elway. You know, I like what they're building over there. But, you know, when I got traded to go to an undefeated team, to be in that situation and be on a Super Bowl caliber team, it just felt good. So I don't really care about the money. You know, at the end of the day, it's about, you know, it's about happiness at some point. And I was just extremely happy to be over there and be a part of that organization.
All right, you're playing for another Super Bowl caliber team this year, the New Orleans Saints. And you're also for a receiver. Now, I'm a fat, former mediocre offensive lineman at the college level. But for a wide receiver, playing in a dome, to me, feels like the ideal situation. You haven't done that in your career, having played in Pittsburgh, Denver, and San Francisco. Am I right? You're looking forward to playing inside a dome?
Yeah, I'd be lying to you if I told you that that wasn't a factor. I remember when I was looking at the New Orleans schedule and I saw that I think they got 11 or 12 games off in a dome. And, you know, if you just look at all the elements, Sean Payton's system, you know, playing with Drew Brees opposite of Michael Thomas, Alvin Kamara in the backfield, you know, who wouldn't want to be in that environment? And then you add, you know, no weather conditions to that. You know, it's the ultimate dream for a receiver to be in that position. And, you know I say it a lot, but I really do feel it. You know, I'm blessed to be in this situation, and I've been working my butt off just to, you know, seize the moment, carpe diem the moment. And so I'm looking forward to it.
Now, Emmanuel, you played opposite AB when you were in Pittsburgh. Now you're going to be opposite of Michael Thomas. What's the mindset you have to have when you're opposite a receiver that you know that's going to get targeted as much as they are?
You know, at the end of the day, I've been to Pro Bowls, I've been to Super Bowls, and I tell people all the time, you know, it's obviously those guys are going to get their targets, but I feel like as long as we keep the ball moving, the chains moving on third down, everybody will be able to eat. You know, I've played alongside Antonio Brown, like you said. I'm getting ready to play along Michael Thomas, but I've also played along Demaryius Thomas, a guy that when I went over there, he was in his prime, a guy that was going crazy, going to multiple Pro Bowls, playing in the Peyton Manning system, and he had 1,600 yards, and I had 1,400 yards, and we had a tight end that had 800 yards. And so if we're moving the ball and if we're scoring points and we're staying, and we got a good defense to get the offense off the field, there's a lot of opportunities for a lot of people. And, you know, at the end of the day, I'm at the point of my career as well, where, you know, obviously I still want the yards, I still want the stats, but I only got one goal in hand and I want to win a Super Bowl. And so that's all that matters at the end of the day. And that's the mindset and the mentality that I have. I want to enter the New Orleans Saints locker room, be an incredible teammate, be the best player that I can be, the best teammate that I can be, and see where the chips fall.
Now let's talk about that locker room, because it's a new team, compromised offseason. Any concerns about the chemistry you can establish with Drew Brees and Michael Thomas?
I think, you know, I'm one of those guys that go on YouTube and watch how guys play. And I've watched Alvin Kamara highlights. You'll see me at 3 a.m. watching Drew Brees highlights, just getting excited. I watch Michael Thomas highlights, seeing him flex. And I feel like one thing that we all have in common is that we have passion for the game. And, you know, the X's and O's will come, you know. You know, and speaking with Sean Payton and talking about our team, we got a veteran-led team. And myself, I'm coming up on my 11th year in the league. And, you know, I've had probably 6 or 7 different offensive coordinators, been a part of 6 or 7 different offensive schemes. So I feel like in having that experience, I feel like I'll make that adjustment well, you know, in terms of learning the X's and O's. And as far as, you know, the chemistry between me and the fellas, I just feel like that's going to happen naturally anyways. You can't force that. And, you know, and what we're talking about right now, and, you know, through this, you know, pandemic and these weird times in America, you know, everybody's going through the same thing. You look down in Tampa, you know, and everybody's talking about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Tom Brady and Rob and Mike Evans, but they're going through the same thing. Like, these guys aren't meeting. So it's going to be an even playing field as well for everybody. And, you know, hopefully once the time comes that we can, you know, link up, we try to maximize the time.
Now, you brought up Tampa, so I'm going to have to go there in a fun way. But you played with Ben Roethlisberger, Peyton Manning. Now you're going to get Drew Brees. How about throwing Tom Brady into that resume? You could be the ultimate quarterback authority. What you think of that?
You know what, though? I can't really – you know, I got much respect for Tom Brady. He the GOAT, in my opinion, because as many rings and championships that he's been a part of, That's, you know, that's awesome. But at the end of the day, I only got one thing on my mind right now, and that's the beat, Tom Brady. We play those guys the first game of the year, so that's the only thing on my mind is the beat Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I'm not even worried about playing with him as of right now, but if that happens, that would be cool as well.
Emmanuel, you've won a Super Bowl. You've been to Pro Bowls. You've had a terrific career. I want to ask you, 1:30 left in the Super Bowl, that play being overthrown, that's going to be kind of how you're remembered. That play kind of overshadows everything else. Is that good or bad?
I hope not. I hope that's not how I remember. That's not the final play that I've ever played. So we still got opportunities for memories, but you know, everybody's going to remember that. But, you know, I've been fortunate enough to win a Super Bowl with, you know, Pittsburgh, and I've had a lot of great plays. But that play right there is definitely a play that a lot of people are going to talk about. But I hope I'm not remembered that way. I'm hoping that's what I'm saying. But it's a play that, like I said this morning, I was on Fox as well. And I told him, you know, I'd be lying to you guys if I didn't tell you I didn't go out to a football field when I'm training, and I didn't simulate telling somebody to throw me the post ball and simulate me catching that ball and just thinking about what could have been. But, you know, at the end of the day, I guess you had your hands crossed that he would overthrow me since you're a Kansas City Chiefs fan. And it ended up working out in your favor.
Get him. It definitely did. Emmanuel, I'm going to offer you the chance to pass on this question because I don't want to be accused of just trying to stir drama. But I am going to ask the question because I think it would be inappropriate if I didn't. You want to be an NFL analyst. I'm going to put you in the ultimate spot. Should a team, and again, you can pass on this, should a team sign Antonio Brown? Would you advise the team to sign AB?
Oh, man. Last time I was on NFL Network and I broke this down, it just went viral. But you know what? And honestly speaking, I think, you know, I look at AB and I look how hard he's working, and he's working his butt off. And he's a guy that I've literally played with 4 years, and I know what he's like to be on the field. He's a threat on the field. And I just feel like, yeah, he should have an opportunity to be back in the league with the right team. I just feel like with the right team, if you think about the risk and the reward is greater than the risk if it's with the right team. And so you want to talk about a guy who, when he steps on the field, he's a game changer. He's a guy that can literally beat you by yourself. And that goes to say, like, just throw the ball up and this guy will come down with ridiculous catches. Give him a 5-yard pass and he can literally take it the distance. That is a game changer. And I feel like a lot of teams in the league need game changers. Now, obviously the antics, he's kind of dialed them down off the field. And, you know, I'm happy and I'm proud of him for that. You have no idea. Like, I watched this guy. I got so much love for this guy. I got so much admiration for this guy, just his work ethic and how he is as a father and everything. And I hope, you know, that another team gives him an opportunity in the NFL. And I hope that he capitalized on that opportunity because, you know, we talk about a guy who's a Hall of Famer, in my opinion. But, you know, I don't want him to go out how he's going out right now. I want him to have an opportunity to revamp himself because we all need second chances.
Great answer. Thank you for the time. Good luck in New Orleans. Yes, hope you get that Super Bowl this year. All right, stick around. Nice Rick Bucher and Darnell Smith just around the corner. Darnell's question of the day: was Michael Jordan's biggest failure as a teammate? We'll get into that. Dark!
It's Darnell.
That's my guy. My guy.
My question of the day.
All right, welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley, Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai. All right, time now for Darnell's question of the day. We're going to bring in Rick Bucher from his crib from the Bay. He's going to join us as Darnell asks his question of the day. Darnell, homeboy, take it away.
Yes, sir. Let's talk some Michael Jordan. We've all been watching the Last Dance series about Jordan's Bulls. And this past week, the doc focused on Jordan's relationship with teammates. Well, now former teammate Will Perdue reveals that Jordan was distant from teammates, and that his dad, James, actually had a better relationship with the team than MJ did. So I want to ask you guys, do you have a problem with Jordan not being close to his teammates?
I have no problem with it. Sometimes when you're flying that close to the sun, it's better not to take passengers along with you, and you're actually protecting them from doing something that they don't even realize could cause Michael Jordan or someone at that high of a level problems. I don't have a problem with it. It's probably what Jordan had to do, given how much attention, spotlight, and scrutiny was on him.
Well, look, I don't have a problem with it at all as well. MJ said there's a price to greatness. There's a cost to winning. So I think this is something he didn't want to pay for, which is close friendships with those who were his companions in this journey. But if you think about it, I think it's for a different reason. I really seen this dynamic up and close personally where people walk on eggshells when they're around great people, iconic figures, whatever you want to call Michael Jordan as a teammate at that time. They don't come to you as who they are, so therefore you don't even receive them as who they are. So Will Perdue may have come to Michael Jordan on eggshells. Look, day one when I met Bruce Smith, Thurman Thomas, and Andre Reed, I wasn't the authentic Marcellus Wiley in that moment. I was kind of like, hey, hi, you know, a little shy in the moment, and that didn't necessarily lay the groundwork for us to have a great relationship. It's when two individuals, no matter what level of success that they have, find a commonality and respect. And if you don't find that, it's not really on the big person in that equation either. Maybe on you for not producing and showing them who you really were.
No, I don't have a problem with Michael's relationship with his teammates. First of all, James Jordan was retired. What the hell else was he going to do? Of course he could hang around a lot more. Michael had obligations. He had Gatorade commercials to shoot. He had other things to do. And if I'm watching the doc correctly, he was certainly spending enough time with those guys on the plane and in the locker room. It's not as if he never interacted with them. The bigger question I have is, why the hell was James Jordan, as Will Perdue suggested, hanging around and rebounding for those guys? That's like elder abuse. The dude was near 60. What do you got him chasing rebounds for? Especially Will Perdue, considering the fact that they didn't let him shoot the ball anyway. What the hell were you doing shooting? To me, we've gotten really soft when we start to look at how much time did a guy spend. Now, Hall of Fame credentials are going to include, well, how many team dinners did the player arrange in order for him to be qualified? We've gotten soft, man. Michael won them championships. He talked to him when he needed to. What else? Am I missing something? What else does he need to do?
Well, I'm going to defend Will Perdue. He was probably just answering a question, maybe not trying to take a shot at Michael or be critical. He was just being honest that given where Michael was at that time in his career, he actually knew Michael's dad better than Michael. I don't think Will Perdue probably had the money to gamble with Michael Jordan like some other players, because Will Perdue was never a great player. And so they probably just didn't connect. There's probably a handful of guys on that team that didn't connect with Michael in a real way. But certainly Charles Oakley, who played with Michael for a brief time, they connected really well. I think Ron Harper and Michael Jordan connected really well. There were certain guys on that team that he connected with. I'm going to defend Michael in the sense that you fly that high of a level, you bring everybody up into that atmosphere and they choke on it. And maybe Will Perdue just wasn't built for that. Maybe Will Perdue has no problem with that. But I do find it funny, Rick, that on the same day this comes out, there's some story from, I think, Quinn Cook, that LeBron James has this incredible, he's the jokester, he's the biggest, keeps it all fun and entertaining, and it's all juxtaposed, I think, opposite Michael Jordan, who's beating up teammates and not hanging out with Will Perdue. so maybe it will be a feather in LeBron's cap that he hosted team meals and Jordan didn't. All right, we got to keep it rolling. Uncle Jimmy's just around the corner. We'll get his take on today's topics. And his approval rating for Blake Snell says he wants all of his money. I think I know where Uncle Jimmy is on this. Speak for yourself from the crib, presented by Hyundai. More after this. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib, the day before Friday. All right, time to roll out to Uncle Jimmy's crib. Get his take on Blake Snell, Tampa Bay Rays pitcher, who says he wants all of his money despite Major League Baseball perhaps only playing half its season. Uncle Jimmy, you have a take on Blake Snell?
You damn right I got a take. Hey, listen, I don't want there to be no misconceptions upon where I stand on this one right here. I'm 110% with my boy B. Snails in the Players Union. Okay, let me tell you something, man. Uncle Jimmy founded his own Players Union back in 1959, okay? So I understand what these young players is going through, okay? So it makes me qualified to speak on the issue, player to player, simp to imp, if you understand what I'm trying to say, okay? In case some of y'all ain't noticed, Uncle Jimmy's playing time done got cut short since this little thing came up. And I tell you what, I wish the hell you would come up to me telling me, Jim, you only performed for 16 seconds. I tell you what, I got four words for you. Contractual obligation. Pay me my money, nephew. Don't play with me and my money right now. These blue M&Ms ain't cheap. Don't play with my money. I'll hurt you. You'll get hurt.
Internet, you and Blake Snell dumped the fire.